Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. I'm Matt Cable here in Los Angeles, California, and I'm out of practice. This is the first time I'm doing the intro in a little while, Zach.
It's wild that people, myself included, I had to preach one of the bread texts a couple weeks ago, and I preached the last one, I guess it was, and I made jokes about how bread, and how hard it is, but I'm going to give ourselves a pat on the back, Matt, because we did the bread text in podcast form over the course of about 2 days.
We did.
And somehow they weren't in order either. We, like, mixed up the production schedule. So we didn't even go through them linearly. So if you're looking for a bad time, just record 18 podcasts over the course of a week because of vacations.
Yeah. Just record them all at once, especially when they're exciting texts. Like the bread text.
It was so hard, Matt. I would have ideas and things that I knew nobody cared about. And normally, when I have those things happen to me, there's a microphone and the internet for me to just dump them into.
Right.
But I just had to, like, hold them or tell them to people who actively did not care in front of my face instead of through the anonymity of
you. You could have recorded some one-offs, like, I'm having withdrawal, and I just... Hey, listeners, I just need to talk to someone. It'll go over well. Nobody'd be worried about you.
Special loneliness episodes.
Oh, man. I noticed your synod just, I guess, installed. Friend of the pod, former guest of the pod, Reverend Nadi Boltz-Weber.
Being a guest on the podcast is like being an Olympian. You know, you're never a former Olympian. You're always an Olympian. And being a guest of the Vinyl Preacher, you're always a guest of the Vinyl Preacher.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah, that was reported upon.
It did make me wonder, could we get a specialized call like that from the Synod for being podcasters? Do you think is that a thing?
We didn't actually say it. Nadia Boltz-Weber got this call to be a pastor of public witness through the Rocky Mountain Synod. I wonder, Matt, I thought she was already under a specialized call to do that, like when she left House for All. I guess we're not that close of friends, and I don't care. Other guests of the podcast, Jason Chestnut, hasn't he been under at various times under like a specialized call to the internet or something?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
When he was in Baltimore?
At the moment. I just think, maybe we should talk to a bishop and see if we can be pastors of Playlist Witness or something.
You got a new bishop in, you know. Wait, this is how you make a splash with the religious news service. You do a kind of weird call, and we're here, Brenda.
I wonder, like, maybe. So here's how I see it playing out: we get Tim Brown to write about us, and then LSTC will immediately retweet that, and then then it starts to go viral. And then I feel like maybe it'll rise to RNS level.
Well, I think here's our issue, right? Like, if I'm a bishop and you've got somebody who wants to do something funky, or not even that funky, just not normal, and they come and say to you, I'd like to do this, can I have a call for whatever this is? And they're like, you'd have no financial obligation to me. You're like, sure. I'm not sure the podcast, I haven't checked our finances recently, but I don't know that our finances are at supporting two full-time staff yet. But once we get there, then I think
we just got to get there.
We go strong to the bishop. We just go to Satterley. Go to Craig.
That's true.
We definitely do it.
The guest that refused to make a playlist. It seems like the route to go. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, definitely. We just got to get that Patreon going.
Oh, one day we'll get on Patreon. I am going to have shirts to sell soon, Matt. And you've got shirts to sell. I think we're going to make a merch push here in the future.
Yeah.
Because Organizing for Mission made shirts with your face. I don't know if they licensed your likeness. I don't know. Is it simply fan art? I'm not sure if your legal agreement.
Yeah, I do get a lot of fan art. It's just comes to the territory. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you want a t-shirt with me as a DJ at the Coachella tent, you can get it. You can get it on the OFM website.
We're about to sell shirts. We're going to buy a bunch of shirts for students. Because we've been tabling, Matt. In real life, this is, we're recording at the end of the first week of class here in Boulder, and I think it first week of class at USC. We're on the same calendar this year.
Yep.
Bingo, bango. And the swag that we had this year that was most popular with the students is we did buttons, because the shirts, it took us a while to get it all figured out. We couldn't get the shirts in time for welcome week, so we're going to wait for a minute to let people get excited about it and then order the shirts. And we have shirts that are a version of a sign we've had for a long time, but it says that God loves dinosaurs, tacos, and queer folks. And they've got like a little icon of each next to the words. And so those buttons were really popular. So shirts coming down the pike, if you would like a God loves dinosaurs, tacos, and queer folks shirt.
Yes. Love it. Yeah.
We have info cards, Matt, that I was just processing.
Wow. Which that's means what your info
I
card
have
looks
to
like.
Read double-sided, okay. Matt. Well, the front side, normal things. One of the things that's important that we do put on there is birthdays. Mm. And we've been bad about birthdays in the past, and we're trying to get better, because observing people's birthdays and finding ways to do that is like a nice like filling in the gaps of you're away from home and like your family isn't there to like
sure
sing happy birthday to you. You know, some like little stuff like that. But then on the back is the really fun stuff where we have a line that says, I like to eat, but I can't eat these things. And so the idea is that's food allergies, but we often get creative responses like sushi. I don't think that's a thing you can be allergic to. All sushi. But then favorite dinosaur, and underneath it says in parentheses, this part is very important. And I'm disturbed by the youth these days, Matt. I recently watched the episode of Netflix's the movies that made us, of Jurassic Park, which was
classic,
so good. The kids these days, if I had to say the consensus of favorite dinosaur on campus, Stegosaurus, which is exceedingly lame.
Stegosaurus, isn't that your state dinosaur?
And state fossil.
Incredible.
That's correct.
Incredible.
Not the mascot for the Colorado Rockies baseball team, which is a Triceratops.
Is it really? That's
yeah,
extreme.
Digger.
Why is it a Triceratops?
Because it's cooler, obviously.
Wow. Wow. I like the info card. That's a... Gosh, man.
We moved away from the, like, long... Like, the sign-up sheet...
Yeah.
...to the info card.
Okay.
And, I don't know... So much of what we do around tabling and like recruiting is stuff we do because we think this might be a little bit better, and it's nothing we do like all of a sudden is incredibly effective, right?
Right?
Like that's not how this works, right? You're like, you're just looking for slim margins of improvement. My theory behind the info card versus the sign-up sheet is that folks who fill out the info card are more committed than the sign-up sheet because then I'd get like when we give away succulents at the student involvement fair, which is the smartest idea in the world, and I'm always scared I'm going to show up to involvement fair and other people are going to be doing it, but they haven't, right? So as long as we have seconds around, we'll get like a line like down the block of stuff, like get mobbed and stuff for the succulents, which Megan, who's our program coordinator, figures out and like grows half most of them. Like she'll start soon propagating succulents so that we have a bunch for next year's involvement fair soon. But the folks who... if we did something like, yo, you got to put your email on here to get a succulent, I'd get a bunch of email addresses, but they'd all be pretty, like, crappy. Like,
yeah,
I'd never see those people again. Most of them would unsubscribe soon thereafter. Versus if you're going to take the time to fill out your own individual info card, perhaps that's more of an individual commitment.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
Makes sense. It makes sense. See, I should have got a tutorial from you beforehand, because I just had the email sign up. Although my new innovation this year that I'm using at the congregation, and then I used it for tabling too, was a digital visitor card. I got the little QR code.
Ooh.
To go to the website and put your stuff in there, and a couple people have done it, so that's fun.
Wow. Yeah. The resurgence of QR codes is so surprising to me.
It's been around for a while, but it seems like everyone's using them now.
Because I remember when I first got to Boulder, my first fall, 2011, and I've still got some of like the first promotional stuff that I did, like hanging up around, and it all has QR codes on it. and nobody ever used them, and immediately we quit doing QR codes. And now people are like, oh, QR code.
Right. Yeah, I don't... is it the move, the acceleration of moving toward digital stuff with COVID, where it's like just all kinds of things just shift online? Is that part of it?
I think that's certainly part of it. I think the other thing is the continued movement towards the primary, phone experience being camera-based.
Mm, yeah.
2010... camera phones probably still sucked a lot more. Certainly they sucked more than they do now, but...
Yeah.
Maybe more flip phones.
Any excuse to not have to type something. I wonder where literacy mm-hmm. will be in 100 years. We'll just be taking pictures and sending them. I'm excited about my little QR code, but like you said, it's all marginal things. It's like, oh, that's a fun little thing. Does it mean I'm going to have 30 more? No. But it's it's just... It's one way that we're trying to be a little more intentional about follow-up, including in the congregation. All right, what's our follow-up strategy? And I don't think we've had an intentional one for a little bit. So this is part of that. I did tabling, too. I love that we're talking about tabling because I have my notes from 3 years ago. And I wrote down, for some reason, outdoor office hours and some other notes. I think tips that you would get, because every year it's just, we're back in the same, mm-hmm. back in the same boat. I went over to USC to do tabling at the SC Christian Connect, where my favorite t-shirts every year say, Jesus, USC Christ. It's like the U.S., it's as if Jesus Christ has USC in the middle of the name.
Got it.
It works.
Got it.
It works. People still...
Okay. More visual than an audio.
Yeah. I don't know how to... I don't know if you're supposed to pronounce it differently. Is it just Jesus Christ? Or is it Jesus USC Christ? I should have asked somebody, how do you pronounce that? I should have asked them.
I agree.
It's funny. I think in the past, I've been much more intimidated by the just massive numbers of Campus Crusade for Christ and InterVarsity folks who just have lots of staff. I know folks now. They're nice people. They have so much staff. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh. But this time, I went with... I have my little garden flag, rainbow flag, and my Lutherans for Black Lives t-shirt from Reconciling Works. And I had those out with my little Martin Luther bobblehead and whatever I could basically find in my office in the 20 minutes before I ran over there, threw into a bag and set out on a table. And then little stickers. They were the little stickers from Illustrated Ministry that say you are loved, written over rainbow colors, of course. And a couple people, a handful of people were really... excited about that, right? We didn't have... There was a table next to me that had succulents, so somebody figured that out at USC. Mm. I don't know if I can steal it.
Well, here's my extra succulent secret, Matt, is you make them pot them.
Yeah, I know. Right? That was here. Yeah.
You don't just give them away, because then they have to hang out at the table and you can talk to them for a little bit.
Yeah, you should do a series of tips for Lumen or something. When are you going to... You should lead one of those... you should do a tabling... Do a little tabling workshop in the summer.
There are folks who do it better than I do within the Lumen network.
Well, I would love to know that. But this is all I was thinking. Again, who knows if any of these folks come back, but it did seem like, I did have the feeling where I was like, yeah, it was worth it to stand out here for 2 hours to be able to let folks know there is a place here that is affirming. Somebody asked me are all these groups affirming? And I was like, well, you'll have to ask them, I didn't want to just throw shade at everybody there, but it's no, probably not a few, but not,
yeah,
probably not the majority. And then I was thinking these little stickers, they just say you are loved, and people were so excited about them. And I was like, this is not that clever of a slogan. This is not Zach's God loves dinosaurs, tacos, and queer folks. This is not nearly that interesting. It just says you are loved. That's literally all it says. And yet people were excited about it. It's a pretty low bar. That's it. And yet that in itself is all right, that's enough of a message to put into the world for 2 hours on a Sunday evening. So that was my experience tabling. We got some names. I hope some folks come and visit. But I don't know. Did what I could, right? That's all you can do with tabling. You do what you can and see where it goes.
It's like farming. My hot take, man. I think I'm going to write something up and send it around, see if I can find somebody to publish it. But I had to do a lot of... We scheduled a lot of tabling this week. We've got a new intern, Lexi, who will probably get on the podcast at some point, who's a student at the Iowa School of Theology. We had Lexi helping us out. We've got Megan, our program coordinator. And then Megan, it turns out, had a COVID exposure. And we found that out on Monday, so we went and got Megan tested as soon as we could. And this is Friday when we were recording, and that's when we found out that Megan does not have COVID. But because we're trying to be responsible humans, Megan couldn't help us out. So I ended up having to do a lot of tabling this week. And I feel like real churches, real pastors should all have to table. Like,
yeah.
You should have to do it, right? Like, you need to, like, properly understand your location in the universe is what tabling does for you as, like, a clergy person. Like, you need thousands of people to walk past your table and demonstrate their complete lack of interest in you and what you're doing.
Yeah. Yep.
And to be able to, like, complete, like, to sharpen your spiel, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, when you do have students engage, like, what are you about?
Yeah.
And you got to do the elevator pitch thing, but you...
Except they're scribbling on an elevator pitch for the first 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of people that walk by my church with zero interest, but I get to hide behind the walls. I don't have to stand out there and watch them do it. I get to hide in my office and let them walk by. No, you're right. It's like it is such an important experience. Even like the elevator pitch, like figuring out how to adjust it as you're talking to somebody, where it's like somebody goes, "What's a Lutheran?" And so like I have a way of describing that, and then I figure out this person's like really interested in church history. So I'm like, "Well, how?" So then I start to go in that direction. Then I go, "How do? Is this too deep? Am I going too deep for this person?" Right? Like I don't know. Right? So you're trying to figure out who this random person is and what they're going to care about in those 2 minutes that you have.
Okay. You've got to read all of like the like subtle clues of like where they're coming from, why they might be interested.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. We found out that Megan had the COVID exposure while tabling together on Monday. So before we found that out, because then we sent Megan home, I got to stand back a little bit and watch Megan, you know, who's been around now for a while and is pretty good at tabling. And so it was the first day of our intern, and like, there's no real way to prepare someone for tabling other than to just throw them in the water and have to make like a couple like... do some real awkward elevator pitches, especially about a ministry or just now learning about. So I let Megan and Lexi do it. And Megan Grave, one of her first answers to a question somebody had was fantastic. And just like completely reorienting and totally an important thing to remember, like for clergy, especially religious folk who listen to this podcast. Our elevator pitch goes something along the lines of Bread and Belonging is a student community supported by Lutherans and Episcopalians, so you don't need to be either one of those things. The main thing we do, blah, 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 blah. Megan did the pitch, and then the person said, "What's an Episcopalian?" Or, what's Episcopal? And Megan said, "Well, it's a religion."
Yes.
Because like you can't make any sort of assumption that this person, random person on the street, has a decent understanding of mainline Protestantism and the different denominations.
Yeah.
There's a bit that I stole for tabling a bit this week on one of my favorite podcasts, Comedy Bang Bang, when they'll ask someone to start at the beginning and they'll start with the Big Bang. They have like a little story to tell. I'm like, well, let's start at the beginning. First, there was the Big Bang, which is funny. But to start like with almost with that assumption of like, what does this person know about? I mean, like it's a totally different thing versus like talking to a visitor who walks through your doors on Sunday morning, who's you can assume some level of religious Christian literacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, it really, yeah, it's trial by fire. It also, like...
baptized in fire. That's what Jesus was talking about, or John the Baptist.
I mean, my experience of it too, as somebody that doesn't, is like, I'm not you, I'm not a professional campus minister, but I do this like once a year, and so it's like that work that didn't work, and then I don't get to do it again for a year. It's like those, it's like the one off, it's like Holy Week or whatever, right? Where you're like, well,
yeah,
let me take some notes and hope I can remember where I put those notes a year from now.
Well, I mean, that's true for us too, right? Like, we're not going to table like that with that many students again until the much scaled down version in the spring semester.
Like, at least with Sundays, I can, okay, last week, here's the adjustments I'm going to make for next week. I'm going to do the same thing over again. Here are the adjustments. But that once a year stuff, it's tough, especially when it's
the
so
worst
crucial.
When you remember a thing that you learned last year when you're in the middle of making that same mistake again.
Right.
Right. Like, oh, I remember when I was like, we're going to do this, and we didn't.
Oh, man.
Hmm. Well, Matt, talk of tabling might be appropriate because Jesus is talking to someone essentially at an involvement fair. He's traveling around the Galilean countryside, talking to folks who might be interested in joining the movement.
Good transition. Good transition.
Bang. Well, we're working on them all 6 weeks of our off season.
Well done. I should make sure. Lectionary 23, right? It's been so long.
That's what I've got.
Okay.
For September 5th.
Gospel according to Mark. Yeah, Labor Day weekend. So it's going to be a big Sunday. A lot of people.
Oh, so many people going to be in church.
Church, yep. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Jesus set out and went away to the region of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know he was there, yet he could not escape notice. But a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately heard about him, and she came and bowed down at his feet. Now, the woman was a Gentile of Syrophoenician origin, and she begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. He said to her, "Let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." But she answered him, "Sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." And then he said to her, "For saying that, you may go. The demon has left your daughter." So she went home and found the child lying on the bed and the demon gone. And then he returned from the region of Tyre, and he went by way of Sidon toward the Sea of Galilee in the region of the Decapolis. They brought to him a deaf man who had an impediment in his speech, and they begged him to lay his hand on him. He took him aside in private, away from the crowd, and put his fingers into his ears, and he spat and touched his tongue. And then looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him, "Ephphatha," that is, "be opened." And immediately his ears were opened, and his tongue was released, and he spoke plainly. And then Jesus ordered them to tell no one. But the more he ordered them, the more zealously they proclaimed it. They were astounded beyond measure, saying, "He has done everything well. He even makes the deaf to hear and the mute to speak." The Gospel of the Lord.
We're through with the bread, man.
We're through with the bread. Yeah.
I guess there's bread in here.
It's just, it's a really easy text to preach that's full of
racism. It is a banger, though.
Racism, sexism, and ableism. So, you know, there should be no landmines for you to walk into. Preacher.
I don't know, man. I was pretty, like, I was like, oh, this is a good one to preach. There's a lot here.
There's a lot here.
You know, the what I think of as the go-to... I wonder how, like, not us people preach this, Matt, because my assumption of mainline Protestant-ish people in my universe of clergy folks, the obvious angle here is of the Syrophoenician, like, the justification of the Syrophoenician woman and how she sets Jesus straight and that Jesus changes his mind, and the God in the outsider, and that whole kind of deal, which I'm sure I've preached a number of times before, which are lots of things that I like to preach on. Like, that's what I would have in my head.
But you think other folks are going to preach this differently? How do you think that? We don't know. We should do some investigation.
No, we'd have to talk to people not like us, and that doesn't sound very fun. Based on this reading from the gospel, because when you talk to people not like you, they might set you straight, and you have to hear some hard things.
Amen. It's definitely...
I would rather not table and sit inside the walls of the church and not have to hear the hard things.
It's definitely definitely what's going on here. It's a real like connection point to last week too, where there was all this stuff, as you recall from 6 weeks ago recording it. A lot of stuff about purity codes, but really at the end of the day, it was about inclusion, and it was about the boundaries around the community and how Jesus was upending those. And here again, we've got some boundaries, and the people outside of the boundaries are upending them for Jesus. But it's a similar, like, I think there's a common connective thread there of what kind of community Jesus is building. So, if you want to keep the themes going.
I enjoy tabling most of the time. Like, I get really excited for it. Like, I get the same sort of... I've seen it with you outside of a merch table at concerts, right? I get it before, like, stadium, like, games and stuff, mm-hmm. right? Like, my anxiety goes into hyperdrive. Like, if we're not, like... It doesn't matter how early we are, like... Until we are in the stadium, I am like, oh, we got to get there. We're not going to get there. We're not gonna. Like, let's go ahead and get in the game, right? Like, so on Monday morning when I showed up, and like, there's no point to table at 8 a.m. Like, that's not going to do any good work right then, right? Like, but you know, I'm just like, oh, we got to get this stuff in the thing, and like, recognizing I've gotten better about going to games and stuff with other people who do not share this deep anxiety. So Megan and Lexi do not share this, like, because I'm like, we're missing students right now. We're not, like, there are people walking by where our table's going to be, and we're not there, and we're missing. I'm right, we got to get up there. But one of the things that is difficult about tabling with a sign that says God loves dinosaurs, tacos, and queer folks, and being one of, if not the only Christian group that's open and affirming, is doing that... especially by yourself as a cisgender straight white man, with authenticity and figuring out ways to do that, or figuring out how to do that well. But as that is who I am, a part, I think, of what God calls me to do these days is to hear things I don't always want to hear. Mm-hmm. And so to have that modeled by Jesus as holy work in of itself, I think is helpful and important, and like it shows that there's some good list. Like, if Jesus' work here appears to be quite passive, and perhaps it is through this act of listening that the Syrophoenician woman, the outsider, and with the daughter with the demon, is transformed, in part because of Jesus' ability to hear things that it'd be really easy for him not to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, no, amen to that. I mean, that's like, Jesus is a person here that's willing to be challenged. Are we a people that are willing to be challenged? Is that a Christian practice, to be willing to hear things you don't want to hear, to be willing to be challenged? I mean, there's such baked in a defensiveness, the idea of apologetics, you got to defend your faith. I mean, there's,
oh my gosh,
you know, all that stuff, but like, are you willing to be challenged? I mean, Jesus is challenging, and that's what Jesus models for us here, which is a powerful thing, and remains a countercultural thing. Even though we've heard this story so many times, it remains a challenging story.
The interesting angle in which I might actually preach this time that would be pretty, although I'm starting to be compelled by what I've talked about, but what I prepared to talk about, Matt, was towards the end of the story there with the Syrophoenician woman. Jesus, you know, insults her, let the children be fed first. It's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. Yesterday was International Dogs Day. I saw some incredibly cute dog stuff on TikTok, which I really
did you watch the Paw Patrol giving. Movie? Paw Patrol movie, just in honor of, no?
We did not inform my child that a Paw Patrol movie exists. Instead, I'm going to a Jeff and Paige concert tonight, outdoors. They're the most popular children's artist in all of Boulder.
Hey.
So this will be my first concert in a while, Matt. I'll let you know how that goes. My Mountain Ghost show got canceled. But Brandy Carlile coming up in 2 weeks.
Nice.
That said, Matt, they did not have International Dog Day back during the times of Jesus because they didn't like dogs. Dogs were not really domesticated. They saw dogs, Robo Molina says that their understanding of dogs is much closer to our understanding of rats.
Did they, are you trying to tell me they did not have a canine first responder team?
They, believe it or not, I mean, you know, add that on to the deleted scenes of Monty Python, The Life of Brian. What have the Romans ever done for us? Well, they did institute the canine first response team.
So dogs is bad. Really, they didn't like dogs, they like rats.
They're like rats, right?
Which means that they could cook you a gourmet meal.
They could stand on your head.
Look, what we're trying to say is in the ancient Near East, they did not have cute family movies starring dirty animals.
They may not have had any films at all. Who knows?
Who knows?
I guess historians.
I wasn't there. I don't know.
I wasn't there. Hard for me to say. She calls her a dog. He calls her a dog. Jesus calls the woman a dog. It's not fair to take the children's food, i.e. the Israelites and Judeans, and throw it to these Galileans who are just rats. And she comes back, and Jesus loves a good comeback because that's normally what he does. But she flips the tables on him. Sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. And Jesus takes that step back, game, respect, game, and he says, for saying that in the NRSV, you may go, the demon has left your daughter. I did the Greek. I did, got back in the Greek. I hadn't been in the Greek in a while. Went swimming. I was wondering what that was, because there is this implication here, because then it happens again in the second story we get, Ephatha, that there are magic words involved. And the Greek here is actually pretty interesting. A more literal translation would be, through this word, the demon has left your daughter. Because it uses logos. What gets translated as saying, like to say. And that's not the normal, like, Koine Greek way of saying, like, to say. You would normally use eipen, which gets used, like, throughout the story as well to describe their dialogue. And so, on one hand, right, you could see this in Mark, which comes well before John, is perhaps a prescient, or the proto-logos being developed here, that it is through this word that has power that your child was saved. But then Robo Molina make the point that Ephatha, as you dramatically read for us, Matt, does not get translated here. And it, in the Greek, it's not, like, they don't switch it into Greek, right? Like, this is not one of those things where in the translation we went in and said, like, the translator decided to it. At the time, they decided to, like, you need to know this word because this word has power. And that was how they understood healings. And it was an important part of healing stories, is that the words themselves have power to change things. And so it was important for you to know the words. And I think that that's important to emphasize here, but perhaps also draw a distinction between that and what I am inclined to be pretty skeptical of, which is, like, magic words. Because I don't think that's exactly what this is. But what I hear in this story this time around is this idea that words have power. And so, yeah. That's where I'd push it towards good news here.
Yeah.
That the words have power to change us, to change the folks, to change the world.
Yeah. My wife has a t-shirt from Out of Print Books that says, a word after a word after a word is power. Margaret Atwood. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Words have power.
Are we going to bounce? I don't know if we're going to do the Proverbs, if we're going to bounce back to the Proverbs.
But
the
can.
Proverbs that goes with this, right? Starts with, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. And at our first Bread and Belong, in our first Tuesday night meal and program, we did a classic, because we did Fire Bible Study, stolen from you all at St. Mark's. And it's been long enough now that nobody remembers the last time we did all the stories. So we did Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Nice.
Which is fantastic. It's just a killer story, right? Like, you don't need to do, having this intern around and doing supervision and stuff is great. And also, like, they're asking great questions, like, what are you hoping, like, and I end up trying to talk about what I hope to accomplish in this Bible study, which is only 45 minutes and after dinner. So, like, realizing that can't, like, change everybody's life with this story, and that, like, let's just lean really hard into telling it really well and making it feel like it's an accessible story, which we do, and that story lends itself to telling it really well. We always say a furnace of blazing fire out loud together, which is fun. But one of the fun things we got to is that in that text, it doesn't describe, you know, you got Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the furnace, and then everybody sees this fourth person in there that has the image of a god, but it's not named. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, it doesn't say who it is. So we got to, like, who is it, right? Like,
right.
Because, like, they're like, oh, is it an angel or something? And I'm like, yeah, that's probably a pretty fair, like, thing to draw from that. You know, we got to, like, well, what if that person had always been there and it just took them being in the furnace for them to, like, see the other person? And then I said something along those lines. That makes sense. It was probably a woman, so they probably didn't even, like, acknowledge her presence until she was in the fire. And then one of the students came back and said, one of the new students came back and said, why do you think it's a woman? And I'm like, well, it didn't have a name. So that's how women go here. So my question for you, right, with names and with words and their power is perhaps the Syrophoenician woman's lot in life would have been different if her name had not been the Syrophoenician woman.
Yeah, just a Gentile of Syrophoenician origin. She gets a lot of descriptors, but not a name.
She doesn't get a name.
The deaf man doesn't get a name here either, in the second story. Is that because he's deaf, or is Mark directing our attention elsewhere?
Robert Molina would say that, you know, the point of the stories is that Jesus, like, reputation is growing. And that he's going to all the places, that if you draw out the path on a map, it's not logistically feasible. Like, it's really kind of nonsensical. Drawing the tension of, I believe it's a Mark thing, right, that a prophet's not accepted in his hometown, that he's able to go out to the places where people don't know his birth origin and see the power more clearly than the people who knew his family identity.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I think it's so important to bring that out because it doesn't, it's not like, I mean, clearly he's in Greek territory, right? He's, the woman was a Gentile, the reason of the Decapolis. But I still think, like, as a preacher, like, you've got to lay that out for your audience. It's got a red flashing lights for us. But I think that helps get to the point of the story. So, for sure. Make sure you lay some of that out.
Is it a Vonnegut quote? This Lot's wife didn't have a name, and I love her all the more for that. But she turned to look.
I don't know. It could be.
Well, Matt, what have you been listening to the past 6 weeks?
Ha! What have I been listening to, indeed? Well, at first, I was listening to a lot of John Mayer because he's got this 80s album out. And then Chris made fun of it and I stopped listening to it. So more recently, let's see. So I'm going to throw a song that I just discovered. This artist, Joy Oladokun. I don't know if I'm saying her name correctly, but she has just an incredible album. And the song is called Sunday. I think it came out last year. But I really like it, so check that out. It's called Sunday. It's by Joy Oladokun. And I think it fits. I think it fits this text. It's about whether you're feeling included on a Sunday morning or not. And then one of my favorite bands, just increasing in my own favoritism, The Killers put out a new album, second in 2 years. Huh. Putting you two to shame.
All two of them. Putting those albums out.
All two of them. Pressure Machine, it's called. I put it on. I drove across the city to Amoeba Records to get my copy, partly because I saw Amoeba Records might have a bonus lyric booklet giveaway with it. Ooh. And I was like, that seems cool. And, like, it's going to sit on my bookshelf. Who cares? But it still felt like an adventure. Drive across the city to go pick up. I did. They had them. I was like, and I had to ask the guy because I kind of saw them out of the corner of my eye. Like, and I was like, do you guys have any of those lyric booklets? Oh, yeah, we got a bunch of them. If you've ever been to Amoeba Records in Hollywood, we gotta go, Zach. Next time you're out, you gotta. It's like,
for sure,
because you buy the record and then you gotta go meet them on the other side of the store I don't know, it's part of their security system, but it's like a whole thing. And now I'm getting used to it.
Sweet.
But they have, it's just incredible.
Spoilers, Matt. The CU, the Buffs, play at the Rose Bowl this year.
Ooh.
It's UCLA. So I've had my eye on it.
Come on out. The weather's nice. So anyway, Killers, Pressure Machine. It's all about this little town. I can't remember how it's pronounced in Utah that Brandon Flowers grew up in. I got the vinyl version, of course, because I was just so excited. It's like the first time that I bought vinyl the day it came out, and then like that was my first listening to the record was like dropping the needle on it.
Yeah. That's good.
It was really fun, you know. And it was like, and it's got this like very sparse acoustic-y kind of feel. Like there's more than acoustic, but it's very sparse. And so I listened to it late at night. It was very spooky and wonderful. Really good stuff. But I will say, the thing that's missing on the vinyl, if you listen to it on Spotify, they actually have snippets. They sent an NPR reporter to this little town and recorded like snippets of people talking about their lives, and they've interspersed that between the songs, and it is it's actually better. Like it makes it just really like enriches the whole listening experience. But Zach, this album features one of your favorite artists, Phoebe Bridgers. Featuring Phoebe Bridgers.
I do have one issue, Matt. Phoebe has a incredible. She released her dates for her fall tour, and she does not make any stops in the Mountain West.
What? Nowhere in the Mountain West. What? She just skips over and goes to the West Coast, or what?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Brutal. Better write a letter.
Mm-hmm. I tweeted at her. It didn't work.
Well, in the meantime, you can listen to the song "Runaway Horses," The Killers, featuring Phoebe Bridgers. Again, recommend listening to it on Spotify, where there's a haunting story told before the song. Just really good stuff. I don't know if it fits his text at all, but I just had to put it on there, so that's what I'm gonna do. Then finally, other big news in the world of people with 90s nostalgia. REM putting out a 25th anniversary edition of New Adventures in Hi-Fi, which I was really sad. They like announced it early in the morning. They had a limited edition marbled vinyl, which sold out in like minutes. Because I looked at it later in the day, and they were like, all these fans that were mad that they had bought it, and then they got an email saying we ran out. Very sad, but I'm eyeing it. I'm eyeing it, Zach. May have to get this album on vinyl. New Test Leper is from that album.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a song about Jesus going around, kind of. It's got some good stuff in there.
Album has grown so much on me.
Yeah, right? I went back and listened to the Are You Talking to R.E.M. Read Me about New Adventures in Hi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is really good. I forgot all this stuff was on this album. So that was fun.
It gets, yeah. Ugh.
That's what I got.
So good. I have some vinyl preacher recommends as well, Matt, before I get to my playlist, get to my songs. Number one, I'm in the middle of reading Brandi Carlile's memoir, Broken Horses, which is really good. You should read it. It's really good. If I were to be like super nitpicky, my nitpicky thing would be that like as a writer, you can tell Brandi writes songs and not like prose, you know? Because the prose is fine, but then, like, she'll throw in, like, a turn of phrase or line that just, like, is incredible, you know, and just, like, that's really good. Like, that's just a really good, like, way to say that thing, right? And it almost is, sometimes, initially, it was a little distracting by, like, how good, like, there'd be a turn here, and you're like, God, it's so good, and then you're like, book report. The deeper I've got into it, the better it's gotten, too, especially her. She does a chapter on the mother and, like, talks about where the song that we, I think, both love, her song The Mother, came from, which was her experience going through prenatal stuff in, like, the traditional, like, father role, where she says, you know, they talk to you like you're an idiot, and that, like, if you're ever... as if you're going to have no responsibility raising the child and stuff. And she just wanted to be a mother.
Yeah.
So really good.
Yeah.
Check it out. Then Friends of the Killers, Dawes.
It's true.
who I've got tickets for later hopefully we'll be able to see them. They've done a podcast recently on Spotify that you can find, Dawes the Podcast. And it is incredible, Matt. You've got to listen to it. There are only three episodes in the setup. So Dawes is a four-piece band. It's two brothers, Taylor Goldsmith and Griff, his brother. And it's just Taylor interviewing each of the other members of the band. Right? So there's three episodes, and he just talks to them all. And the last one is the best one, Wiley, who appears to be the coolest dude in the world. He's the bassist. And that episode is incredible because they tell like the story of like how they made it, and like Wiley was in high school when Simon Dawes, which was like the band before the band, somehow like they knew a guy, and Simon Dawes got to open for Maroon 5.
Oh,
so their first tour, and he's 17 in high school. Is opening arenas for Maroon 5. And so they all just assumed that's what touring was like. And like evidently, you know, when you open, like lots of times when you open, like nobody's there, or they don't care about you and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, but they were like, Maroon 5 was so big that like we would open and there would be 20,000 people like in the arena and they would be screaming their heads off. And like, when we went on the next tour, we were like, obviously it's not going to be like that, but I'm sure some of those people were there for us. And then the next tour, you know, they play like completely empty rooms where they're just playing for the bartender and stuff. But then Wiley, like, he went to, oh gosh, what's the school in Los Angeles, the super creative school that everybody goes to, that like Tupac went to?
Oh, I don't know, but yeah.
Anyway, he decided one of his like power moves back then after he came back from the tour was he was like, this is really dumb. I'm never going to school. But he had to go to school. He made this like deal to be able to go on the tour, but he just quit bringing like a backpack. So he would just like walk into classes and sit down with nothing. He said some of the teachers eventually were like, hey, you're just really like bringing the vibe down. So if you like don't come to class anymore, I'll give you a C.
Incredible.
Oh gosh, but check it out, it's really good. Especially that Wiley episode is fantastic. That said, I'm going to talk about songs about saying and names, Matt. Jane Says, which is a great song, which is about Jane's addiction, literally. Feels like a good fit here. You know, I got interested into how to say got translated, so check it out. It's a killer. It's not literally a killer song. It's a banger. Then I'm going to go with another 90s song, Matt. Hit that first verse of the Proverbs. Another song I've grown to appreciate is the Goo Goo Dolls' Name, which is a brilliant song as well. And finally, another song about addiction and friends who have difficulty with addiction, but you got to play it this week. It's Hunger Strike by Temple of the Dog. I don't mind stealing bread from the mouths of decadence, which is kind of what's going on here.
Nice. Good playlist.
Good to be back, man.
Good to be back. As always, it's been real.
Real vinyl.